spiritual path, and Anthony G is going to come up here from Baltimore and explain that to us.
Yeah, how are you?
Thank you, good.
Oh, give me a hug. Thank you. I'm a blessed daddy named Anthony. I'd like to thank God for allowing me this opportunity. Thank this area, Tony and Raheem, for making this happen. And I'm nervous as heck. My disease say I'm not enough. That's the first thing. So I've been praying and trying to do the things necessary to get my ego out the way. And let God use me to the best of my ability. I got the book, not that I'm going to read it, because I like to share my experiences and hopes. But I'm getting old, aging in recovery, so I forget stuff. So I just got the book up here to hide what I'm telling y'all about right now. Just a couple little things that remind me to touch on, because sometimes I forget. I want to say that I want to thank the lady, Miss Janice, from last night. She was awesome. I want to thank God for allowing me to meet my two wonderful friends sitting over there, and some of the new gentlemen like Tony, and I'm going to forget your name, but you know I'm talking about you, brother, that I had breakfast with yesterday. I apologize. Allow me to meet some wonderful people. You know, the area has been real kind to me. And our spiritual path. I got clean on June the 21st, 1991. I was 24 years old. I was a little boy. I was a little boy in a 24-year-old's body. And I'm the only dark-skinned one in the house of three boys. I'm the middle child. If you know anything about the middle child, they have issues. They have issues. So on top of being a middle child and receiving all that love for 2 years, and then here come the baby, I'm the dark child. And so I felt different in my household. You know, my family is from Florence, South Carolina, Greenville, North Carolina, and Virginia. So my auntie that lived in the household with us was from Florence, South Carolina, and she was mean to me. Her sister, which is my grandmother, was a pastor of our family church that we still have back in Baltimore, Maryland, to this day. I said that to say, as I went over, because I like to read. I'm not an avid reader, so don't misunderstand what I'm saying, but I like to at least touch a little bit on what I'm talking about. But I don't like to get up and bring the books and hide behind the literature. I don't like that. You know, so I'm going to do my best, and that's going to be that. Grandma was a pastor. So as grandma being a pastor, y'all know I was in church all the time. And my mother took us to her mother's church all the time. When I turned 2 years old, my father, who had me at 50 outside of his marriage, right? I'm giving y'all the confusion in my life, coming in the world. I'm coming into some confusion. At two, he became a Jehovah's Witness, which is the only one on his side of the family that's a witness. My other grandma and grandfather and all, they all went to one church. My other grandmama was a pastor at another church. So by him being married, of course, he came. Now, let me say this. I had a good father, an awesome father, a wonderful father. He just made some mistakes, right? He had two kids. Well, let me say this. The truth of the matter is he had three kids. One I never met. He's probably 80 or something if he's still living. But from my two, I'm the oldest, and it was 1 2 years younger. He would always participate in our life, but he had to go back home. So as he would come to our house to bring money, toys, gifts, and I called him, I was spoiled, so I called him on a regular. I would hear these debates about religion. That's what it was. It was religion I was hearing the debates about from my mother and my father. As a small kid, wanting your mother and father to be together, but all you see is these conflicts, you know what I mean, periodically. Spiritually, I didn't know which direction to go in. What kept me going in the direction I was going before I started using was that majority of the family was going one direction. So I went with the majority of the family. When I met you guys in 1991, and it didn't start right away because I got here 24. And if you winked, I had a low self-esteem and a low self-worth. So if you winked, you wanted me. I was 24 years old. I wasn't doing a whole lot of stuff like that out in the street. I had a girlfriend who was putting me to sleep so she could smoke all my crack. Yeah, that's the real story. Yeah. She was good with it, so she had the fingernail game, the put him to sleep game. I don't mind giving you some so you can go to bed. Yep. And I can smoke up your stuff all night. I was never a dealer. I was an honest hustler. I had pickup trucks. My back is killing me right now from being an honest hustler. Scrapping metal and whatever you guys needed me to move and haul with my pickup trucks and cutting y'all grass. I'm blessed to have made it to Narcotics Anonymous at 24 years old. I had a 4-year-old baby, and I had a baby on the way by my best friend. Both my first two kids' mothers was my best friends. So that tell you, right? But I believed in God. I knew something was carrying me out in them streets, right? I always think about something that happened when I was real little, before my mom moved away from that auntie. We went to stay with our father at his house, and my mother used to have a habit of cutting through our bedroom to get back to her bedroom from the bathroom. Now, she could have went straight up the hall, but she would cut through our room, and the steps was right there. And she cut down the steps, and she laid there for some hours. Now, I'm telling you this story because as a 5 or 6-year-old little boy, when I got home and realized my mother had broke her hip, as a 5 and 6-year-old little boy, I grabbed my little brother, and we got on our knees, and we prayed in the next room for my mother, which was our room. This was 5 years old I was doing that. I grabbed my brother's hand. All I knew was to pray. And I got on my knees and I prayed for my mother. But of course, as the disease of addiction and its identical twin, which I'm not going to say because I don't want to break a tradition. I'm going to try not to say it. Its identical twin would have it, I would get caught up in the streets. The funny thing about my life is I never really wanted to use. I just kept going to the barbershop. I kept hanging around my older brother and my cousins. And y'all told me when in 1991, if you keep going to the barbershop, you're going to get a haircut. Right? That's what y'all would say when I got here. I kept hanging around them, laughing and giggling with them because I didn't have an identity of my own. I couldn't go off and do something that I should have been doing at that age. I was hanging with him, which was 5 years older than me. And one day I just said, pass the joint to me. The joint only led to the dope, the coke, and everything else that come along with the process. The whole time I got high, and this is my topic is our own spiritual path, but I have to talk about it the way it was. The whole time I got high, I went to church. Ushered, sang on the choir, did everything. The whole entire time. Listen, I was a drug addict that when I got high with one of them cousins that was there, one of my brothers, when I smoked that first joint, my road dog, he would say to me, I know you didn't just call grandma. I was the kind of addict that when I got high, I would call my pastor grandmother, my other grandmother, my mother, my father, and tell them I love them. That's how I was. That's the kid that I was. And we'd be high as Fat Charles, and he'd be hot. He'd be hot. I know you didn't. We had women, dope, everything. I might ease off and call my grandmother and just say, hey, grandma, what you doing? She'd say nothing. She never called me by my name. She called me by me and my other cousin's combined name. She said nothing. And he'd be hot. The girls be there, the dope be there, everything. And he'd be like, why every time you get hot? I didn't know. I had a spiritual connection with my grandmother. And I really didn't like her in the beginning of my life because I didn't understand why she was catering to one group of kids and not catering to us. It wasn't until I met you guys and my mom kind of broke it down for me that my grandmother was a good grandmother. She looked out for the kids who didn't have nobody to look out for them. So to you, being her grandchild too, it looked like she overlooking you, but she really helping them because they don't have a mother and father to help them. But I did. So me and grandma got tight. We got tight, right? My grandmother was a powerful woman. She was a businesswoman. She was the pastor of the church. She had a lot of skills, and she taught me stuff about my own business that I didn't even know, you know? But moving right along, I came here at 24, and another thing, my spiritual path, guess where I found out about NA at? Well, not initially, but where my first day going to meeting, I met my cousin who got clean before me at church. She was in church. I heard she was going to church. She got her life together. And I said, I'm going to go down to the church and see her. I ended up in a meeting that day because I just wanted to hang out with my favorite female cousin from my daddy's side. Right? Now, my cousin went back. She's behind me now. But I ended up staying. And I thank God for you guys not having rules and regulations about this relationship we can build with a God of our own understanding. I thank God that you guys, I don't even know if me and Raheem being as tight as we are, if y'all had that stuff in place. Because he might not like me and I might not like him, but y'all said we don't care about your spiritual belief. All we care about is your desire to stay clean and how we can help you, right? Things started happening to me over the years. Because I got here, I was doing all the wrong stuff. I was not interested in a step. I wasn't interested in a tradition. I was interested in how I'm going to get all my stuff back and which one of you ladies I'm going to get next weekend, where the dance going to be. It was all that. I was young. No, I was young. And I ain't coming to lie to y'all. I came to tell the truth, you know. And when I tell people today, do the work early. If you do the work early, you can prevent yourself from some bad decisions and some bad choices over the years. Because me not doing the work early, and I just told you I came here with somewhat spiritual background or religious background at least. But I believe in myself that my religious background allowed me to have a spiritual relationship with the God of my understanding throughout my whole addiction. That's my belief. You know what I mean? Whether or not it came from church, whether or not it came from the kingdom hall, I knew that it was a God and I wasn't it. And I knew he was carrying me. Because I remember New Year's Eve, them hearing them bullets get a little close. Me and my brother walking from the party and the bullets sound like they were shooting directly at us. So I remember that. I remember being in places where only God could have got me out of. I remember all of that. So I believe. But you guys helped me to build a better relationship with my higher power. And I'm one of those people that passed over the second step with a minimum of concern because of that background I came from. I couldn't see that it was y'all hugging me, that it was the home group, that it was the ashtrays, that it was the chairs, that it was mopping the floor. I couldn't see none of that. I knew God when I got here, so my sponsor used to just look at me and shake his head. He said, you passing over, you ain't getting none of this stuff, right? Only for me to have to go back over it again. You know, and start recognizing the tools and the methods and the things that he was using to get me to build the relationship with him. You know what I mean? Because I didn't recognize it at first. I felt like I knew about God since I was a kid, so I'm good. You know, but it don't work like that in NA. He wants you to acknowledge that, well, minds, let me say minds, want me to acknowledge the steps and the things that he used so that I can tell the next person coming behind me, pass the torch, the methods in which we help each other to get. And I think Ernest talked about it yesterday morning in his workshop, that doing the service, allowing God to work through me to do the service so I can tell my sponsees to do the service. And this thing can keep going around and around and around, you know. So I passed over the second step with a minimum of concern. I've had the same sponsor for 31 years, going on 31 years. So he knew me. We grew up together. So he knew me, and so he would take me back to some stuff, show me some stuff, and teach me some stuff, you know. But with these little notes up here, I kind of like thank Nakazanamis for each one of us being able to build on that relationship our own way. You know, can't nobody say you're not doing that right. Can't nobody say that you can't talk about that. You know, no, none of that. You know, you just continue to build on your spiritual belief in your spiritual conscious contact with the God of your understanding, and watch how he take your life like that. Your life will just blossom. And you only understand how it's happening over the years. So I say conscious contact, so I want to make reference because I'm nervous, so I didn't mention. My home group is Courage to Change out of Baltimore, Maryland. We meet every Tuesday and Friday on Zoom and in person. I also attend a Happy, Joyous, and Free men's rap group every Wednesday and Sunday where I met Raheem and Daryl at. And I get on a conscious contact meeting every day at 10 o'clock if I can, you know. And the conscious contact meeting is important with me speaking today because I got on that meeting probably, I think, 2 years ago. And I don't know about any of you guys, but all my life, my brain been doing this. All my life. So I know how to pray. I can pray. But the meditation part sometimes get me. Still in the mind for a long period of time. Sometimes it gets me, you know. And I'm not the most successful with doing that. You know, and I'm open to listening to other people's methods. That's why I love that meeting, because it's like sometimes I've seen it up to 1,000 members on one meeting before, and people share their experience, strengths, and hopes. And when you get 1,000 people from all over the world sharing their method, it helps you. Some people like the meditation, the music, meditational music. Some people like to walk in nature. Some people, that I take a little bit from each and every one and try to just make my life better. You know, I don't proclaim to be walking this profound spiritual path. Please don't get that twisted. I'm still human. I'm still subject to go get me a pair of gaiters. I'm still subject to look at you inappropriately. I'm still subject to cuss somebody out. And I'm a truck driver by trade, but I retired from that. I'm doing something different now. And I still can have road rage after I finished praying that morning. After I got off my knees praying that morning. Sometimes it's when I'm most connected to God when my disease wants to attack me. And if I ain't spiritually fit, like if you come in here with the right pair of jeans on, if you catch me on the right spiritual day, I might say, sister, we don't have to wear jeans like that no more. It ain't about that. But you catch me on the wrong day, I'm going to say something different. You know? And so I don't stand up here professing to be the most spiritual guy in the convention this weekend because I'm not. You know, but what I can tell you is that the Rims and Nakas and Nam is the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, the 12 concepts, a sponsor, a home group, a foundation, being involved has changed my life and the quality of my children and my grandchildren's life. Because now it's not just about me. The spiritual relationship and the spiritual path that I'm taking now is more about them. I'm up more at night worrying about how to pay for my daughter's college than I am worried about me. That's what it's about for me right now. I'm trying to figure out what's the next function to get all 8 of my grandkids to stay the night in my house. That's what it's about for me. You know what I mean? It ain't about a whole lot of things. Sometimes, I went to Chicago to their last convention about a month ago. Years ago, I couldn't have never done this, ever. And this might not be nothing to you guys, but it's something to me because sometimes I have to evaluate my own spiritual growth. You know, I bought a mink coat before I bought my new home. I bought a mink coat when I was living in Pennsylvania, and it's real nice. I like it. I was going to Chicago, and you know, when you hear about Chicago and Detroit conventions, it's about the fashion show, right? It's about the fashion show. I got here at 24, so I'm well aware about the fashion show. And that's not to make mockery of their convention. It's just every area is different. You know what I mean? I was talking to a friend of mine who asked me to come speak up there. And without my permission, it just came out. I don't need to take no damn mink to Chicago. I ain't trying to press nobody. What I need to take my mink to walk around the inside the hotel for, right? It's like, you're not even going outside. Listen, I literally didn't go outside the whole time. It's too cold. So I didn't go outside, so why would I take my mink? I wanted to take my mink before my higher self took over. I wanted to take my mink because I wanted to fit in. I wanted people to say, look at him. I wanted all the stuff that is really not. Was nothing going to be humble about that. Nothing. It was all going to be flash and look at me. I fit in with y'all. I've been here a while and all that foolishness. And what I was so proud of myself about is that I was able to not do that. Years ago, I wouldn't have thought twice about it. Years ago, I'd have went and bought a pair of gator boots to go with the mink, a gator hat to go, because that's what the plan was initially. You know, go on down Dan Brothers and get you a new pair of black Ushers, because mine's is too tight now. I'm using them for the motorcycle only now. I need a new pair. And go get a black mink hat and go up to Chicago and show up. But that's not recovery. Anybody who pay bills can get things. If you pay your bills on time, you can get things. That ain't recovery. Recovery is on the inside. And spiritually, I'm more concerned. I'm going to say it again. I'm going to keep y'all. If you talk to me, I'm going to talk about my grandkids and my kids. That's what I'm concerned about. Listen, the old me, I know God is changing me, and I don't know if I'm on topic or not, but I know God is changing me. My daughter called. She said, Dad, I got accepted in Norfolk State University, and now I got to figure out if I'm going to live on campus or live off campus. The old me, Alexis, why would you live on campus when you only 12 minutes through the tunnel when you at the school? The old me, voice elevated, the old me thought about the money. I thought about the money. The new spiritual path I'm on said, call your little brother, you ain't never been to college. I said, Alexis, let me call you right back. I got off the phone before I raised my voice because before I abused my kids. Because I'm an emotional guy, so therefore I would just take off. Like if it didn't sound right in here, it came out of my mouth. And it caused harm to my children, right? It caused harm to my children. So I called my brother. I said, hey, your niece was on the phone just now. And she was talking about living on campus. And she only lived 12 minutes away. And my little brother never used. He smoked the first joint that our oldest brother gave us together. And he never used again, right? He I don't want to say he big time in the college thingy, but he's been around. He's been to about 4 or 5 of these colleges. He's assistant athletic director. His goal is to be the athletic director. So he's been doing this stuff for years. I never been to college. I never graduated high school. I followed the big brother. He graduated, but I didn't. Right? So my brother said, if it was my two kids up here with me and they wanted to go to college, I would send them to live on campus because it's a different... experience than driving. I got off the phone immediately, called my daughter back, and humbly apologized. And she kept saying, Daddy, you ain't saying nothing wrong. Daddy, you ain't saying nothing wrong. I said, No. I want this stuff on these books, and I'm embarking on them on a different level now to manifest themselves in me. So I need to humbly apologize to my 21-year-old. And tell her, no matter what daddy got to do, you stand on campus. You stand on campus. I don't give a shit what I got to do. And that includes getting rid of the new house that I bought. Getting rid of the toys that I have. I don't care what I have to do, you're going to stay on campus. So you can get that experience. Because for one, I never had that experience. Not that my parents wouldn't have did it, but I was so busy running the streets and doing everything other than trying to get an education. I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday. That's my baby girl. And I shouldn't say this on CD. She might hear this one day. But I wanted a baby boy. Listen, let me tell you how God worked. I wanted a baby boy. But my recovery child is a girl. When I got here, a 4-year-old and a baby on the way, I told y'all that earlier. And I wanted another boy. But that recovery child, knowingly or unknowingly, has helped me with my recovery and my spiritual walk. Because she don't fool with me. She only fool with me when it comes to getting my money. Right? She listened to her mother. I think she took sides. And so, she don't fool with me. Now, I can't tell you that part of it without telling you. Daddy was an asshole because he couldn't understand how his best friend fighting him over this kid. I'm the same father with all three of my kids when given the opportunity, right? So because I was early in recovery, I told you that's my recovery baby. So I was 24, I was new to the program. I was hurt because I couldn't understand how my best friend, who we always had my son with us, is treating me like this with this baby. I was in child support in like the first 3 months. It was like, I'm going to get you because you hurt me. The problem is when you're not spiritually fit on the inside to fight that battle spiritually and you let your emotions take over, y'all know I call B words and I literally, I hate to say this in front of y'all, but again, I came to tell the truth. That's the way I get my help. I one time choked the you know what out of her and said, you're going to give me my baby. And through the grace of God, she went to court. We got out the elevator together. And this is my best friend for 5 years, right? Her and my mother and me and her mother, we all was tight. Right? And I ain't proud to tell y'all this, but this was in 1990 something. Let me say that part too. I ain't the same person, right? When we got out the elevator, she said, when they call my name, I'm not going to answer. But if you ever put your hands on me again, you're going to jail. I ain't never put my hands on her again. Subsequently, I lost the relationship with my daughter. No matter how many times I try to practice the ninth step, and I have, I try to make the amends. When it looked like guys like the gentleman sitting over there, who's my predecessor, they told me in Baltimore I ain't had to be a doormat to nobody. Nobody. Mother, father, children, siblings, none of that. So when it looked like you're using me, I don't need you in my life. People don't understand that. Some people do. You can't just call me for money. My car broke down. I need new tires. The windshield cracked. Never once, hey, how you doing? You know? And even when she tried, and I tried, because I don't want to say she didn't try, because she did. I took her out for Valentine's Day. She was my date. And the same year she took me out for Father's Day, I was her date. But right after that, I wanted to send her the same thing I sent the youngest daughter the following Valentine's Day. And this chick told me, I don't give anybody my address. That's what my daughter told me. I don't give anybody my address, right? And y'all know that cut, you know? But I have to practice the spiritual principles and surrender. I have to practice some spiritual principles of acceptance. I had to practice trusting God. The same person I was talking to last night, I was talking about how my heart ain't hard. If she called me, I'm going to answer. But it depends on what she bringing to the table, how that going to turn out. Because I ain't just doing money. I don't just want to be a money dad. I want to have a relationship. I want to walk her down the aisle. I want to be there when my grandkids come. I want all the benefits that come from being a good father. You know, I made some mistakes. I had to sit there and eat that. We done had face-to-face like 3 times, and I think it was the 3rd time. She went up me one side and down me the other, but my sponsor said, just let her get it out. Don't say nothing, and that's what I did. And she was wrong about some of it. Some of it she was wrong, but I had to sit there with tears in my eyes to listen, to let her get free, you know? And it still didn't work, just for the day. We still ain't talking, you know what I mean? Just for the day. But somewhere in our spiritual principles, I'm hopeful. I'm still hopeful. I ain't going to ride past if she broke down on the highway and I see her broke. I ain't going to do that. But I don't make no whole lot of extra phone calls and stuff. No, I don't. But I do pray. When I say my prayers, her name is definitely included in those prayers. I do want to see her succeed, you know, but I can't let people just treat me any kind of way. And that includes the youngest daughter and that includes the oldest son. And that includes all 8 of them grandkids that I'm so fond of. You can't just treat me any kind of way. I have to love myself. And if I let you treat me any kind of way, I'm not loving myself. Especially if I'm hurting after I allowed you to treat me any kind of way. You know, I don't know how much more time I have, but I moved back to Baltimore from York, Pennsylvania. I was in service in York, Pennsylvania, my home group, on a home group level. I've always been in service on the home group level. I like to get speakers. I like to get these brothers' numbers down here and have them to come speak on our men's rap. And when I was in York, I like to get people in Delaware and Philadelphia and Baltimore to come to York and speak. But when I left York, I left almost my whole support group. My sponsee was up there that I was close to. My sponsor's up there. My sponsee brother up there. So when I bought the house back in Baltimore closer to my job, I had to make some decisions. You know, for one, thank God for Conscious Contact every day at 10 o'clock. I started getting back on my knees praying. I started asking God to guide my ship again. You know, because a lot of times I'll get distracted with my job, the girls, the cars. I love cutting my grass and planting my flowers around my new house. I did the same thing at the old house. And I'll get distracted and I'll be so tired, I don't need to pray. I don't need no God. I just get up and start running on my own juice on a regular. You know, so when I came back to Baltimore, I recognized that I needed to do something different. You know, initially, I'm going to jump back real fast. I had 25 years, I can't remember. And the relationship that I thought I was going to marry after I cheated, I need to tell y'all the whole truth. After I cheated, I've been told my wife I wanted to get out of the marriage, but I was holding on. And she already knew this stuff, so I don't care about this CD at this point. I had a daughter. My daughter and my oldest grandchild, and God was working spiritually in me then because I didn't understand what was going on. But what I did know and what I told my ex-wife that I want to get a divorce, and this wasn't the first time I said it, but I said, but them children's life ain't got to change. Them children's life ain't got to change. I want a divorce. We did that. We wrote it up ourselves. We're still friends to this day. She's been to my new home many times. I can depend on her and she can depend on me. But we're not married anymore. Our grandkids have never seen us fuss. The oldest one is 17, right? The youngest two is three, I think. Yeah, I think they're three. They never seen us fuss. I've never been a black so-and-so and she's never been a B.I. Never, right? And if I ain't in a relationship and we had a cookout together and our grandkids there, I might even go get her plate. You know what I mean? Because my grandkids watching. And in order for them to grow up to be the six of them as boys, men, I need to show them. You know what I mean? And thank God they have two fathers that's showing them as well. Now this aging and recovery thing just kicked in because I forgot where I was going with all this. I was going somewhere with all this, but I forgot where I was going. Oh, I think I was talking about the coming back and allowing God to be the author of my life and doing something different. I know where I was going now. And so I decided to join. I went to a Baltimore convention. That's how it started. I saw this guy named, I'm going to break his anonymity. His name is Brock. He's always been humble. He's always been in service. He's always been a stand-up guy. He's always been... Daryl seen him when we was up there. Brock is cool as a fan. He gonna stay in his ground. The readings that I read this morning in our meditation and then our Just for the Day, I don't know which one, talked about standing up for yourself, being able to speak up, you know, being able to stand on some principles in spite of everybody else not voting the same way you vote, but you stand on yours, right? And that's what I believe Brock is. So I made a decision. I'm gonna call Brock every week. I think I missed 2 weeks since that convention when you was in Baltimore, Daryl. But I also made the decision to ask Brock, well, how do you get on a convention level? How do you do what some of y'all's doing this weekend? How do you either be on the board, or how do you be a chair or participate under the chair? And so I did that. And somebody felt the need to vote me as the programming chair. Well, somebody else decided, nah, that ain't happening. So... that got undermined it, and it hurt. But I'm saying all this to say how, like, my spiritual path, it be blowing my mind sometimes. It got undermined it. First, they could hear me with my qualifications. Then, secondly, they said, we can't hear you. We're going to table this to the next vote, right? Then the next vote came. They had nominated two of the popular people in Baltimore, more popular than me. And so I had to eat that. So of course they asked you, well, are you still willing to serve? So of course I'm gonna say yeah. But none of this stuff meant anything until, like, I was asked to do another meeting and I picked the topic of being a service, right? And when I read that topic, like I did this morning, that's when I realized that, are you doing it for your ego? Are you doing it for selfish reasons? Or are you doing it to help Narcotics Anonymous as a whole? And are you doing it to be of service? You know, and it's so funny because I told y'all I ain't no big reader. I wasn't no big, like, school guy. But sometimes when you're reading this stuff, it will blow your mind. I said, oh, my God, "You funny, God." I said, "God, you funny. You set me up." Right? And because I read it, I picked the topic. And then I read it. And then I see how it helped me over here. You know? And I also, what I read this morning, I ain't got to like everything that's going on the committee. But if I'm there for the right reason, I can keep showing up and keep serving. You know, and I don't care how long I've been here. I don't care how much time you get. You can still serve. I still pick up chairs. I still make coffee. Back then we had ashtrays, but we don't have them no more. But I did all of that. You know, I ain't so high where I don't want to do this no more. You know, another thing, aging in recovery. One thing I was getting ready, about to talk about was being in a dark place right before I moved. A few years before I moved was the first time I ever wanted to quit Narcotics Anonymous. And it was behind a relationship. You know, it was behind a relationship. I got stuck on the sixth step. I don't know about y'all. A lot of people talk about they scared of four. I was scared of six. You know, and I got stuck on the sixth step. And when that relationship started going to shit, I was able to, based on my hurt, I was able to finish that sixth step. You know, and realize that that God never intended for me to be perfect. He just wanted me to do the right thing for the right reason. You know, and when I finished that sixth step, it took my recovery to a whole nother spiritual level. Not only was I able to finish six, I was able to become one of you guys and become a 12-step member. I was able to do that. And it was embarrassing to tell you guys, "Oh, I got 15 years, but I can't do step 12. I got 20 years, but I can't speak on step 12. Because where I come from, if you ain't did it with your sponsor, you don't speak on it. You know, I got through under the bus one time by a sponsor in another town, and they caught me off guard, so I did the 11th step. But I don't know about you guys, when I got home, I called my sponsor immediately and told him what had happened. And of course, that was a situation where I got caught off guard. But I believe if you ain't did it with a sponsor, you don't speak on it. You know, that's where I'm from. You know, so my spiritual path is every day I talk to God in one form or another. I trust and believe in you guys in the process of Narcotics Anonymous. Things like what Tony P. did allowed me to come down here and speak and share my experience from the hopes. Not only is it about me coming down here to share my experience from the hopes, what about all the food that I'm getting, all the hugs that I'm getting, all the energy that I'm getting? I met the brother on my way to the elevator this morning, and he saw the book. "Where are you going?" "He's sitting right there." You know, it might not be nothing to him, but it's blessing my heart. That's what it's about. A help, B help, A the most. This program's simple. We complicate it. You know, and my spiritual path can be just something as basic as "God help me." I know that I'm nothing without him. Nothing. None of the stuff that I have, none of that stuff is, I won't have any of it without the breath in my body. Now, I don't believe my God don't give me a BMW. And he don't give me the Jaguar. He give me health and strength and let me go work. And I pay my bills on time and I get the stuff that I have. So I don't believe he do that material thing. But he do the health and strength, the emotional balance, the physical and the spiritual and the mental stuff. And it's up to me to do the rest of this stuff. And it's also up to me to make good decisions, because two bad decisions is not going to be smoking crack. Again, you know. And it won't even come in the form of smoking crack. It'll come in the form of her. That's how you're going to get me. It'll come in the form of, and it happened to me before. I don't talk about it a lot, but I shared this with my sponsor last week and he remembered it. See, early on in the 90s, it was this girl in the neighborhood that I had to have. I've been like her since we was in elementary. She out there on the corner. I had to have her. I told y'all, when I first got here, I was so young, I wasn't practicing these spiritual principles, because I should have left her right there where she was at if I was practicing something. Because see, back then, I know now, sometimes when y'all there doing that stuff, she'll be right there while I'm up here saying this. And she'll be like, "Oh yeah, you was just tricking with me last week. So how you up there saying all that spiritual stuff?" You see what I'm saying? But I didn't know no better back then. And not only did I not know any better back then, she told me, and this is one reason why I don't do it. She told me, God, you're shaking it out of me. It was in my grandma's house, the pastor, that I tricked with her. Right? And she said, I need to take a hit first. Early in recovery, in the 90s. I got clean 91. I can't tell you which year it was, but it was in the 90s. And y'all know what I said, because I had to have her. It's a trick of the disease of addiction. Y'all know what I said. Go ahead, just this once.
Yeah.
I don't want to stand up here and tell y'all that. But somebody here need to hear that who might go turn a trick tonight. Somebody might need to hear that. Because I let her smoke that crack that time in front of me. And I learned that I was scared to death. But listen to how my disease, which is cunning, baffling, and insidious, and he moved so gradual that I said, yes, she did it. And I could have used. I could not be standing here with you guys today in Alabama with two of my friends loving on me. You know, because I wanted her so bad. That's how he tricked me. Because it started with her. Even with the mortgage, it started with a new pair of gaiters that I don't need. You need a new motorcycle that I don't need. Well, your Jag is an 07. You need to get a 15 I don't need. I got too many cars. I only can drive one a day. But my disease is never enough. It's never enough her. It's never enough this. It's never enough that. So when I get locked and loaded on the spiritual path, and I told y'all, I start thinking more about my kids than myself. One of the things that blessed me from my ex-wife and I breaking up and getting a divorce was everything she was doing with her good government job for us, I started to have to do for myself. Because it was no longer mommy, daddy, or girlfriend, or wife to take care of the bills with you. So it caused me to grow up, and grow up fast. I got a divorce in 2016. I'm 56 now, and you guys can do the math. But when the ex-wife came to one of the cookouts, she said, you still got all them cars and all that stuff you had with me? Y'all taught me how to maintain the bank account, how to pray and be spiritual, how to not spend just to be spending, and how not only did I want my spiritual being to be right, but I wanted to be able to maintain because I don't have a mom and daddy to run back to no more. So if I get put out, where I'm going to live? So I started disciplining myself. And it's in some of the spiritual principles, I wrote them down too because I told y'all my memory sucks. It's commitment. Commitment is a spiritual... okay. A commitment is a spiritual principle. Okay. That's good for me. One of the spiritual principles was commitment, right? And being, and it say self-honesty and patience and courage and open-mindedness and humility and faith and trust and forgiveness and self-discipline and dignity and integrity and willingness and surrender, you know. And I believe Janet talked about it last night, but it also talked about it in here. Each one of those steps to 11 helped me to grow spiritually, to get to 11, to maintain what I have built, the relationship with the God of my understanding, so that I can go in 12 and help somebody. You know, so I can go to 12 and help somebody. Carry this message of recovery. And people fussing me because I don't always raise my hand on the screen or in the meeting. Because I did a lot of talking in the 90s and early 2000s. So I don't do a lot of talking anymore. You know, and when you knew you want to do this, you want to get up here, you want to be able to, you want to do this. But it's not even about talking. It's about living this program. Living by example. My biggest reward is when my two of my children I'm really good with. You know, my biggest reward is when they call me and they need something and I can be there. It ain't always they call me for money neither. Sometimes my son called me and said, my son literally took me out on a date. Just me and him. He said, Daddy, I ain't bringing my wife or my three children. Just me and you going on a date. He called it a date. And my son at 34 still kissed me in public. I try to stop him at 18. Now that only come from my mother making me kiss my brothers. I kiss all my grandsons. And I tell them, Papa or Papa, love you. Whichever one of them, they call me Papa and Papa. I kiss them. And I tell them, I love you. I hug them. It's important. I will hug my 34-year-old son in front of all y'all and kiss him. And he'll hug me. He wouldn't stop, so I might as well just go on with it, right? So we do that, you know. And when if if and when he had problems in his marriage, he called me one day. I didn't know what was going on. We need to go out and eat dinner together, just me and you. And it was a marriage issue. You know what I mean? Y'all don't know what it feel like to get here at 24 and be a hoe in the rooms and not guys and nines, only to be a responsible man today. And your kids look up to you. Your kids want your want information from you. Your kids know that you got their back. My son can call me right now and say, "Daddy, something going on with the house. I got his back. I'm gonna do whatever." Technology, Zelle right here. Zelle right here, and my knees can hit that floor and start praying for my babies. Those are the two powerfulest things I got when it comes down to the lives of my children. You know, I'm going to close. She said I have 5 minutes. But I want to say none of this stuff I'm talking about would be possible had I not met y'all. My grandma, I told y'all, grandma was a pastor. Daddy was a Jehovah's Witness minister, a servant. And none of them couldn't save me. When my mother came to my first 5-year anniversary, 4 years anniversary, she said, they saying the same stuff I told you. That's what my mother said. They saying the same stuff I told you. The difference is, if I see Raheem in the gutter, if I see this man smoking crack, if I see you on the corner turning one, and then I see you in here, that's the hope shot. Even though my mother and father drank their little drink, but the gas and electric never went off. The lights was always on. Both of them retired, one with 35 years of service, one with 36 years of service. I didn't think they knew what the hell they were talking about. They were my parents. It was only after I met you guys that I had to humbly go back and say, "Ma, you knew everything you were talking about." She said, "Baby, I live next door to the biggest strip in Baltimore, Maryland, where all the famous people hung out at, Pennsylvania Avenue." I didn't know, because they were my parents, so I didn't think they knew what they was talking about. When I met these total strangers in the room, Anakis and Namas, and I could see abscesses all on their bodies, but they had clean clothes on, haircuts, and cars outside, and they smelled good, I could see the evidence that this program was working, because he still got people that shot dope, some of the scars stay. And as a 24-year-old, you could see them. And I would sit beside him, and the arms be big, and I could see. And when he opened his mouth, everybody got quiet. And he spoke wisdom, knowledge of the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and the 12 concepts. When you hear somebody say, "I want to slap my wife, but y'all told me to pray. And when I got home, I didn't slap her, I kissed her. I took roses home to her." That's change. That's change. And when you hear it at a young age, I'm impressionable, but I still was doing the other stuff I told y'all earlier until my turn came. Now it's my turn, you know? And I started off this meeting with saying, "I'm not enough." I need to finish this meeting and saying, "I'm more than enough." Through the rooms of Nakai's Anonymous, y'all have made me more than enough, you know? All I got to do is be willing to give back what was freely given to me. I'm a blessed daddy named Anthony. I love y'all, and I keep coming back.
Hi, everybody. I'm Kylan. I'm Maddie.